Java, what's up?
I want to be part of it.
You want to be part of it today.
Part of the group.
I guess so.
Such a sweet baby.
Do you have treats?
I don't have treats. But I taste like a treat because I'm a snack.
We have a snack. Yes, you are.
This has been one heck of a week.
Oh my gosh, has it?
I wanted to die multiple times.
I can't believe Monday was only Monday ago and it's Friday.
It's been one of those weeks.
Yes, exactly. Like I things happen at like work and we end stuff at home and I was on vacation all last week. I went to Disneyland last Monday. That was so much fun. Happiest place on earth. Always. I've never seen Disneyland and the Halloween theme. So I was super excited to see that. And that was absolutely amazing. And in fact, we caught Cruella. She like walked out of a store and there's this little girl in a stroller outside and Cruella's holding this little golden retriever like stuffed puppy and she looks at her, scoffs and goes, "I don't need this," and hands it to this little girl and then like walks away because of course it doesn't have spots. So it's of no use to her. But it was just so cute and it was so much fun to be in such a positive place.
Yeah.
I like being in the positive place. So
pretty much all I've done this week is I'd come home from work and then I'd work on sewing Hogwarts robes because I'm making some of my friends' Hogwarts robes who are going with me to Universal at the end of the month.
How fun!
So I've been working on those.
We went there too when we were down there and that was so much fun. I saw the cutest encounter. You know, they put so much into the environment of Potter World and stuff. And there was this little boy and he was like maybe 8 or 9 and he was dressed in jeans and nice shoes. And he had on this nice long coat and he just looked so sharp. He looked like a young wizard and he was just like a little student. Mm-hmm. And he walked up to a guy that must have been just portraying a professor. Just, you know, ambiance and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the little boy asked him a question. I didn't hear what he said to him. But the way the employee spoke to this kid was just so professional and so intricate and so patient. And it was just so, creative to see, I guess. So it was fun to be and explore that world. It's very well done. It was very well done.
I'm really excited to see the one in Florida because it covers two different parks.
Oh!
And you have to take the Hogwarts Express to get to each side of the park.
I want
to
go! Okay, now that's our next stop, dear. That's our next stop.
So that's just... Oh, I'm so excited for that. Because, the one in Hollywood is just Hogsmeade.
Mm.
Where Orlando, they have Hogsmeade and they've got Diagon Alley. And you ride the Hogwarts Express between the two parks.
That sounds like so much fun. I am so on board. I want to go. That'll be the next one. Maybe. Excited. We'll see.
I will be probably posting a lot of pictures.
Thank you for the kisses, you sweet baby. Java's been very affectionate tonight, so she wants to be part of the podcast. She just sat in. So, hello, sweetheart. Can you speak? Speak?
No.
Yes?
Java.
No. Speak. Whisper? She's very shy.
Whisper?
Anyway, so we're swapping tonight.
It is episode 10.
We're celebrating with a little shakeup.
I can't believe we've made it to episode 10.
I can't believe it either. And we broke over 2,000 downloads.
We did. And Australia jumped up to number 2.
Yeah, slack in UK.
So,
come on, guys.
UK, you were number 2.
Tell your
but,
friends.
Oh, so sweet.
She thinks he has treats.
Oh.
There you go. We might have to get more of those.
But yeah, UK was number 2, but Australia has like blown you guys out of the water and all of a sudden they're like 10 or so downloads ahead of you guys.
So hey. So we're celebrating with a little swap. And so normally Sammy does cryptids and I handle conspiracies, but we decided to trade off to celebrate 10 episodes. So I did a cryptid today and Sammy did a conspiracy. Usually we also don't tell each other what we're doing, but we planned it this time because we didn't want to step on each other's toes and do a conspiracy that I was dying to do, or that Sammy was, you know, a cryptid that Sammy was dying to do. So this is going to be fun.
This is going
to
be fun.
We get to, well, trainsies. We get to critique each other. Mm-hmm. We get to play each other's parts.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden I understand what it's like when Tessa has to do a conspiracy and why she has, like, 8 pages every time.
Yes.
It's because there's so much more in depth than cryptids.
Exactly.
It's,
you can't compete.
It was insane studying and researching this.
You, like, can't compete,
Pete. I could turn this in as, like, a college term paper.
Exactly, every
and
time.
And probably get, like, an A on it.
Exactly. I am jealous of myself now, of the fact that I know myself now. I was not myself in college, although I was a really, really good student. But it's fun to still get to do these things that are on my own terms.
Right.
So.
All right. So you ready for a penny for your thoughts?
Yes.
Okay.
We flip a coin to decide who goes first.
All right. And I think it's my turn to.
Yes.
Yeah. So you pick and I'll flip.
Okay. Tails. Chicken tail.
Tails.
Hey. I get to go first.
You get to go first.
This
regale me with a tale.
Okay. So. The greatest thing about living in the middle of Northern California is how easy it is to be everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
We're 2 hours to the beach, 2 hours to the forest, 2 hours to Lake Tahoe, or 1.5 hours, depending on how fast you drive.
Mm-hmm.
Like me. I was born and raised here, and it only feels right to pick a cryptid that is not only in my backyard, but shares my name.
Yes.
Speaking of which, when I introduce myself to people, I usually get one of a few questions. Is that short for anything, or is it Tess or Tessa? The answers are no, and Tess or Tessa is fine, but never Tessie. I've never been a fan of the name. Growing up, a little bit of a tomboy, I wasn't interested in anything that ended in IE.
Mm-hmm.
Although my mom will tell you I owned more than a few Barbies and Beanie Babies in my time, and they are still in my garage. They have not been put away yet. I'm still playing with them.
Of course.
So, only you can prevent forest fires and keep Tahoe blue. You know, things we hear all the time.
Absolutely.
We want to see what's at the bottom of Tahoe. At least I do.
I do.
If we ever get there. Lake Tahoe is the second deepest lake in the U.S. with a depth of about 1,645 feet or 501 meters for our metric friends. And at its longest and widest, it measures 22 by 12 miles. The water is so clear that in some places you can see objects up to 70 feet down.
Wow.
That's because 40% of rainfall in the area lands directly on the lake. So it's just one big puddle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you've ever been there, like, it is a sight to behold. I mean, when you come around the mountain on Highway 50, mm-hmm. it's just...
Oh, it's beautiful.
The lake opens ahead of you, and it's just one of the most stunning sights.
It's picturesque.
Sights.
It really is.
It's considered part of the remains of Lake Lahontan, which at one point covered 8,500 square miles. Lake Tahoe itself is estimated to be around 2 million years old, meaning it could be home to something so ancient we can't even fathom it.
Mm.
Like, what was that? Sad.
Ooh.
So if you haven't figured it out by now, I'm talking about Tahoe Tessie.
Yes, 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 yes.
Locals maintain that a large, unidentified, serpent-like creature lives in the deepest parts of the lake and usually appears around June in even-numbered years. Dubbed Tessie in honor of Loch Ness's beast,
mm-hmm.
the monster allegedly appears as far back as Washoe and Paiute legend and may have first been spotted by 19th century settlers.
Okay.
In fact, in Lake Tahoe folklore, Tahoe Tess was the nickname of the local kinesthetically entrepreneurial female.
Oh. Took me a second to put those words together. They were big words. Oh.
So a man named James Whitworth Argyle was an admirer of hers.
Mm-hmm.
And also the reporter who interviewed Native Americans about the lake monster legend. He allegedly named the lake monster after her in honor of Tahoe Tess.
Mm-hmm.
Naming your favorite beast after your favorite sex worker is not how you get a discount, Jimmy.
Sorry.
Pause for laughter.
Please keep going. I'll keep laughing if we keep stopping.
You keep
we stop
laughing.
Talking.
I gotta get more dog treats because she's still begging. So give me 1 second.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm back and we have treats.
That was such a great joke. Here. I love that. Hey, here you go, sweet baboo.
So, Tessie is described as being between 10 and 80 feet long, having a large serpentine body, mm-hmm. as wide across as a barrel, mm-hmm. and coloration ranging from jet black to turquoise. Mm-hmm. So, sounds like Mama's a few pretty colors. Mm-hmm. I feel like she's like kind of like obsidian, is mm-hmm. what I'm thinking. Its skin was usually described as smooth, despite having reptilian features. In some cases, they describe scales, like as big as your hand.
Okay.
Apparently, though, I'm not looking hard enough, because people report having seen this queen bee about half a dozen times every year, so much so that they opened a museum and a phone hotline for the troubled tourist.
Ooh.
Paiute Indians were said to have told white settlers that a fantastic, ferocious monster lived in the lake, but we'll talk more about that in a moment. Mm-hmm. But these sightings are often dismissed of Native Americans trying to shoo white settlers away from the area.
I was literally thinking that.
I don't disagree with or blame them for.
I was literally about to say that, so yeah, that does not surprise me. Maybe we can keep the white devil away if we tell them that there's a monster
in the lake. Psych, we're going to build a bunch of towns around it. Mm-hmm. So in the 1950s, two off-duty police officers out in the lake reported seeing a large black hump rise from the water and keep speed with the boat, going over 60 miles per hour. Another anonymous witness reported, quote, "Myself, along with three others, watched a large serpent-like creature feeding slash hunting a school of large trout. It was the middle of winter in 1979 off the dock at Homewood. It was about as big around as a telephone pole and maybe 30 to 60 feet in length from what we could see of it. It didn't swim like a snake side to side. It was diving up and splashing down with its head and neck into the school of fish, mm-hmm. which were leaping out of the water ahead of it. We were speechless for several minutes afterward." So this thing is like...
Ooh, like dolphin diving.
Yeah, and like splash down, but it's like a big snake, but it's like how weird.
That's its long plesiosaur neck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, which reminds me. Oh, hang on. Pause for a second. Then, mm-hmm. in the 1980s, two fishermen reported seeing a 15-foot-long serpent pass underneath the surface of the water near Cave Rock. Several weeks later, mm-hmm. two divers reported finding an underwater cave, and a creature shot out, leaving the silt stirred. Where the creature had been, there were two large fin prints.
Ooh.
Like, in the silt.
Like it pushed itself up.
Whoosh.
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 So, in 2004, we were getting even closer.
Mm-hmm.
An off-duty bartender on the Tahoe Queen took a picture of a black hump in the water, which he claims is the top of the creature's head.
Okay.
So, there's also a picture, which I will post to our Instagram. Uh-huh. In 2006, a family vacationing near Tahoe sighted a large, black, scaly-looking creature similar in appearance to a sturgeon with an upturned white nose. However, the creature moved up and down again, mm-hmm. like a mammal instead of side to side, like a reptile.
Snake, yeah.
Now this next one is creepy.
Okay. Freak me out.
Yay! Because I don't like
It's your turn
water.
To get to creep me out.
Exactly. I love swimming, but I hate open water.
Yeah, no.
And especially things I can't see the bottom.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a little freaky.
Yep.
So this one's courtesy of Hans from Carson, Nevada. I was diving off Cave Rock with my good friend Mike Nelson. You know that Mike Nelson. We were both using a semi-closed rebreather system, hence no bubbles. The dive was uneventful for the most part. We had been down for about 20 to 25 minutes. The visibility was good and the surface was clear, and there were no other divers or boats in the immediate area. I was motioning to Mike that we should go over to my left when I saw something that I had never seen before. My first impression was that it was a rather long log or a pole. The circumference was just what was about like that, and this is just an estimate. It was about 6 to 7 feet coming toward us. Sorry, mm-hmm. this is someone's comment on a feed. I motioned to my partner to turn around pronto as his back... was to it. In the blink of an eye, I could see it was an inanimate object. I would say first contact sighting was at about 100 to 130 feet away. Mm-hmm. It was closing in fast. I had two underwater flares with me, which I don't normally carry. I struck one and it reacted immediately by going straight down and under us. I would put the length at easily 60 to 70 feet. I would say it passed under us at a depth of about 50 to 60 feet. What it was, I definitely cannot say, but I can tell you it was alive, and it was moving underwater at a rate of speed, and it's my guess that it definitely attained its size on something more than marine plant life. End quote. Like, this thing just, can you imagine? You're like, you're diving, and this thing's coming toward you, and you, like, light a flare, and it just dives, and then goes underneath you. Like, where's it going? Get in the boat. He said he had a couple of adult beverages after the dive, and I really don't blame him.
Yeah, you gotta calm the nerves somehow.
Seriously.
A little bit of the local Native American fire water.
Somebody this year, family vacationing in Kings Beach in August, reported a sighting of a serpent-like creature in the shallow waters. But after being in two theme parks for 2 days or last week, I find people's attention to anything other than the screens on their phones or their kids a little hard to believe. You're not wrong. I mean, if you didn't get a picture of it and you had your phone in your hand, I'm kind of a little skeptical. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So those are our sightings.
Okay.
And I've got a couple of little tidbits. Mm-hmm. So, like I said earlier, if I've ever been to Lake Tahoe, it should be on your bucket list if you haven't been. It should be on twice. Yeah. Once in the summer.
Once in the winter. Yep.
Because it's totally different.
It's the Swiss Alps of the United States,
exactly. It's a gorgeous area, and I don't know how so many people actually swim in that lake, though, because it is so cold. It's made of, like, snow runoff direct precipitation. Mm-hmm. So cold. But you see people, like, actually, like, diving in it all the time. You're crazy. It's cold. But it's also home to a really pretty cool landmark called Cave Rock. It's a large rock formation along the southeastern shore of the lake. But it's so big, you can actually see it from most of the lake, all the way around. Once part of a volcanic vent, the caves were created by the constant pounding of the lake's waves crashing against the rock walls. Mm-hmm. It happened about 3 million years ago when the lake was much younger and much higher. Especially up in a much higher elevation.
Right.
What resulted is Cave Rock, and it's said to be extremely sacred to the Washoe tribe. There are even rumors of the tribe throwing their dead from the top of the rock into the lake, also fueling the theory that I'll get to in a moment.
Okay.
Those have circulated, but are not substantiated.
Mm-hmm.
You can also see what's known as the Lady of the Lake on the rock formation. It's best seen north of the rock. In the morning and the early afternoons, I've seen it, like, kind of from Kings Beach area, I think. And it's just stunning. Like, you can kind
of
see.
Lady of the Lake.
Like, the shape of her face.
Does she pass out swords to people to grant them
a
position of power?
Yes, she does. King Arthur. But why am I talking about this? It's also rumored that the Cave Rock is situated right above Tessie's underwater lair.
Okay.
Likely the place those divers saw the fins disturb the silt in the lake bed. Some reports say that in the mid-1970s, renowned French oceanographer Jacques Cousteau led an expedition to explore the depths of the lake. While submerged in the lake, Cousteau allegedly had an encounter with something so terrifying he refused to leave any of his data collected on the trip and only said, "The world is not ready for what is down there."
Mm-hmm.
And apparently his film footage is also missing.
Mm-hmm.
However,
mm-hmm.
there are also some reports saying that expedition never happened at all. And other reports say it did happen, but rather than coming face to snout with Tessie, Cousteau found the oodles and oodles of dead spaghetti noodles left there by the mob bosses in the 1950s, perfectly preserved, nearly frozen, and waterlogged. So who's lying? Conspiracy meets cryptid.
The oodles of spaghetti noodles.
Oodles and oodles of spaghetti noodles.
I love that.
I loved it too. Dead spaghetti noodles.
Dead spaghetti noodles. Yeah, I definitely heard that.
So what do we think this thing is?
Mm-hmm.
So Indian legends have talked about this thing for a very long time, so it could really be a monster in the water. So mm-hmm. let's set the record straight from the get-go. This could be a monster. Some say it could be a giant sturgeon inhabiting the dark areas of the water. Some sturgeon can live up to 100 years and beyond, and with nothing to compete with it in this lake, it makes sense that something like that would grow pretty large.
Right.
You know, a goldfish theory.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, we do have a lot of boats out on that lake, but at that lake, it's a deep lake. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Somebody said it could be a gator gar, and I had never heard of a gator gar.
I've never heard of
that. But apparently they're very popular here. They're a large predatory fish that lives in the U.S. It can get to 30 feet long and looks like a gator mixed with a fish. So I'm going to post pictures of that, too.
That sounds interesting.
See, that's the fun part of the cryptid part. I get more pictures than I do with conspiracies.
Yep.
Apparently, Mackinac also grow to pretty impressive sizes there. The lake record was 37 pounds, 4 ounces back in 1974.
That is pretty big.
Then, my favorite theory is this one.
It's a Leo Pleurodon, Charlie.
So oh, it could be a Leo Pleurodon, Charlie.
That takes me back.
Doesn't it? I love I'm so glad I got to bring that into this.
I am too.
You're welcome, guys.
I never would have thought of that. I'm glad you did.
So that makes the most sense to me, though, because it like sounds like a Leo Pleurodon.
Mm-hmm.
As anything is possible, and I bet these guys could survive in the depths of Lake Tahoe. I mean, they're dinosaurs, but...
Mm-hmm.
Also, my last little fun thing I found while I was searching for this... And I feel like he should be the keeper of Tahoe Tessie.
Mm-hmm.
The only island in the middle of the lake, Fannett Island, is said to be haunted by the ghost of a hermit named Captain Dick Barter. In 1863, Captain Richard Barter, or Captain Dick to his friends, lived in a boathouse on the shore of Emerald Bay. It was part of the first private villa built at Lake Tahoe, owned by Ben Holliday, a famous overland stagecoach entrepreneur. Captain Dick loved his whiskey, his small boat Nancy, and Emerald Bay itself, in that order, according to him. He frequently rode his boat the 16 miles to Tahoe City and the Tahoe House Saloon and back. One moonless night, heading home from the bar, hermit as he was, you know, as he was known, was rowing along off Sugar Pine Point. A big old wave knocked him over and flipped his boat over. He hung on and barely made it home to Emerald Bay. Once he got back on his sea legs, he decided it was time to prepare for the end. What with that, you know, brush with death and all.
Right.
He tootled out to the island in the middle of Emerald Bay and carved out a tomb for himself in the rock near the island's summit and built a miniature Gothic chapel over it, complete with a small wooden cross, and Barter let it be known in his various drinking establishments that he would be buried in his tomb.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't get his wish. In October of 1873, while rowing home after another night of debauchery, the 66-year-old deepwater sailor was hit by another gale of wind, shoving his boat into the rocks off Rubicon Point, smashing the hull to bits. Barter was washed far out into the lake, where he sank in over 1,000 feet of water.
Ugh.
Yet he has said to haunt the Fannett Island.
Mm.
So he still kind of got his wish. He still is there, you know, for the rest of eternity. He still died on the lake. But I thought that was kind of a neat little kind of extra that I found. So that's Tahoe Tessie in a nutshell.
Oh, I love it. Like, I've wanted to do Tessie for a while. In fact, finding out about Tahoe Tessie was what birthed this podcast. Mm-hmm. Because I'd never heard about Tessie until maybe like March or April of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as
that's
I found,
we started talking about.
And that's when we started talking about it, and that's how the podcast was born. So
seemed right to celebrate 10 episodes.
Yeah, so we have Tessie to thank for this podcast.
Yeah,
we'll go bring her some flowers. Or
we
something.
Will. We'll have to go spot her because apparently she's very popular.
Apparently.
So because then that's just a couple of the sightings I found. There are tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of records of it. Like I mean, pretty much anybody that lives between here to Carson, Nevada, has seen some form of Tessie.
That's
so
awesome.
I've also heard that there was apparently a phenomenon of a kind of wave that makes it look like there's something underneath the surface. That may also be the case with Nessie too.
Possibly.
So, but this was a joy. I'm glad I got to research this one.
I'm happy you got to do that one. That's great. I'm glad I got to just listen to it.
Yes.
Soak in the experience.
Yes.
Just soak it in.
Because she's my homegirl. I got it. She's my namesake.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. That's special dibs.
You're name twins.
Yes, name twins. So, anyway, we're going to go take a break, and then we'll be back.
All right.
Cool.
Be right back.
Oh, no, Charlie. Oh, no.
All right. So... We are back.
We're back.
And it's my turn to...
Yay! Regale me!
To delve into the world of conspiracies.
Do it!
This was, like I said, this was so much fun, so much more in-depth than cryptids, because everything leads to another conspiracy, and they all branch out. And this conspiracy already had multiple branches to begin with, and they just got deeper. So, let me paint a picture for you.
Okay.
August 31st, 1997 was a dark day in history when a fatal car crash in Paris, France took the life of someone the entire world looked to as a symbol of goodness. The world sat nervously on the edge of their seats prior to the death, waiting on any news about their beloved princess. And in the days following, as more details unfolded, the conspiracies began flooding in. I'm talking about the death of Princess Diana.
No, my favorite. Yay. I like this one.
You won't like it much after
this. I know.
I wanted to talk about other conspiracies and things like that, but ultimately I ended up on this one because I was about 10 years old when this happened. You know, I vividly remember it. And it was just, it was a very important day in a lot of people's lives. My mom was a huge fan and supporter of Princess Diana. She was right in that age range of women, 25 to like 44, who just idolized Princess Di.
Yeah.
And my mom was inconsolable for weeks and weeks because it was just, it was so heart-wrenching, you know. so let me give you a little bit of history on the accident and things leading up to it, and then we'll get into the conspiracies. So in the week leading up to her untimely death, Princess Diana and her romantic partner at the time, Dodi Al-Fayed, had spent 9 days aboard Al-Fayed's father's Mohammed Al-Fayed's yacht on the French and Italian Riviera. On Saturday, August 30th, 1997, they arrived in Paris en route to London. And they planned to stay the night at Mohammed's apartment a short distance from the Hotel Ritz Paris that he owned. That night, in an attempt to elude the paparazzi, a decoy car was deployed from the Ritz Hotel's front entrance while Diana and Dodi left through the rear entrance around 12:20 a.m. Not long after their departure, the driver, Henry Paul, lost control of the vehicle at the entrance to the Pont de l'Alma tunnel. There's so much French in this.
And we're sorry.
French names that I had to put into Google Translate to listen to it to hope that I can remember how to say it right. So the car hit the right-hand wall, then swerved into the left lane and collided with the 13th support pillar going 65 miles per hour or 105 kilometers per hour in a 31 mile per hour or 50 kilometer per hour zone. So they were going 30 miles, 30-some-odd miles over the speed limit.
Oof.
It spun and hit the wall of the tunnel backwards before finally coming to a stop. Motorcycle paparazzi immediately swarmed the vehicle, with some attempting to help the victims while others stood by taking pictures of the scene. We think the paparazzi in America is bad. European paparazzi is crazy. Absolutely nuts. Mm. And they were blamed in part for this car accident. Yeah. police and ambulances were on the scene within 15 minutes of the crash, with police getting there within, I think, 5 to 10 minutes, and then the ambulances getting there 5 minutes after the police. A total of 7 photographers were arrested or detained, and upwards of 20 rolls of film were confiscated from photographers as evidence.
Oof.
Investigations on the scene showed that the front airbags had deployed and functioned normally, but it was also clear that none of the occupants of the vehicle were wearing their seatbelts. Things have come to light saying that had they been wearing their seatbelts, the injuries would have been minor and that they could have saved them. So yeah, had they been wearing their seatbelts, they might have all survived.
Click it or ticket, guys.
Click it or ticket.
Wear your seatbelts.
Click
Wear
it.
Wear your friggin' seatbelts.
Click it or ticket.
Wear them.
Wear them.
Do it.
During the extraction of occupants, the front passenger, the Fayed protection team member, Trevor Reese Jones, was still conscious, and Diana, while showing no visual signs of injury, it was obvious she was in shock. Dodi Al-Fayed was pronounced dead at the scene, as was the driver, who it was discovered later had a blood alcohol level of 0.175, which is high, and it is 3.5 times the legal limit in France. So, very, very, very intoxicated.
Yeah, very, very, very intoxicated.
Upon removal from the vehicle at 1 a.m., Diana went into cardiac arrest. CPR was performed to get her heart to start beating again before she was rushed to the Pitié-Salpêtrière Hospital at 2.06 a.m. Resuscitation attempts, including lengthy cardiac massage, were conducted for hours, but ultimately Diana's internal injuries were too extensive. Her heart was displaced to the right side of her chest and had torn her pulmonary vein and the pericardium. She passed away at 4 a.m. and her death was publicly announced at the hospital at 6 a.m. in a press conference. So now to get into the conspiracies. One of the most common conspiracies surrounding the death was that the royal family disapproved of the relationship between Diana and Fayed due to the fact that he was an Egyptian Muslim. Fayed's father launched his own investigation, believing that the British establishment caused the accident as a way to prevent the future prince or future king, Prince William, from having a Muslim stepfather. Because the royal family is a very devout Catholic family, always has been, always will be, sort of thing. You know, and Christianity and the Muslim faith have never really gotten along.
No.
So.
No.
Mohammed Al-Fayed believed that Prince Philip, along with Diana's sister, Lady Sarah McCorkadale. I'm having more problems with the English names than I am the French.
My goodness.
Lady Sarah McCorkadale and many others had instructed security services to cause the crash and murder Diana. Al-Fayed also alleged that his son and Diana had planned to announce their engagement on September 1st, though there was no solid evidence to support these claims. While CCTV footage did show Doty entering a jewelry store on August 30th, it also showed him exiting with nothing more than a catalog. Al-Fayed claimed that a ring had already been picked out in Monte Carlo and that it was being resized for the princess. Another piece that supports this theory is a phone call Diana made to her journalist friend Richard Kay just hours before the accident, where she asked what was going to appear in the Sunday paper about her. However, she made no mention of an engagement announcement. A number of friends and confidants, to include Diana's sister, all claimed that in the weeks leading up to her death, she had made many comments about how she was very uninterested in the idea of marriage, going as far as to say, "I need marriage like a rash on my face." Because you have to remember, she had not too long before that gone through the divorce with Prince Charles, like maybe a year or two prior to that. So, it wasn't very long. It was probably still fresh on her mind. And it was a very messy divorce, you know, very. Diana went through a lot, you know, with the royal family being very disapproving of her, being being really mean to her, you know, and Prince Charles was one of the meanest. So this coupled with the fact that the couple had only been dating a grand total of about 47 days lends to the possibilities of engagement being very slim, you know, because especially coming out of a big divorce like that, I really doubt somebody would rush into another marriage that quickly.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no. Well.
But the thing is, though, is like of those 47 days, they'd only spent maybe like 25 of them actually together. So they'd been dating for about a month and a half. But in that month and a half, they'd only seen each other maybe a handful of times.
Yeah.
So it's like probably, I don't think that they'd be rushing into something like that.
No, maybe not that quick.
Yeah. It just,
unless there was something else, if there's another conspiracy on top of it.
We're getting That's okay. My next conspiracy, but I'm not there yet.
Yay.
So. In fact, John McNamara, who was a senior detective for Scotland Yard and the lead detective on Al-Fayed's investigation, concluded after a 5-year investigation that there was no evidence to support any conspiracy to kill the princess, nor that she was engaged, nor that she was pregnant with Doty's child, which leads to my next conspiracy.
Oh.
Because some people did think that it might have been a shotgun wedding sort of situation. And maybe that's why they were rushing into it. Another part of Mohammed Al-Fayed's belief of Diana being murdered by the royal family is that he believed she was carrying his son's child at the time of the accident. He even publicly claimed on the show Primetime that she had called him the night before the crash to tell him about the pregnancy. The fact that she was partially embalmed after her death gave theorists extra ammunition due to the belief that embalming would make it impossible to test her blood, which it would. If you embalm somebody, their blood is unable to be tested for the hormones that are present when you're pregnant. However, Operation Paget, which was the name of the police investigation into the numerous conspiracy theories, tested Diana's blood that was found in the footwell of the seat Diana had been sitting in at the time of the accident.
Sneaky, sneaky.
And they found that the blood contained no traces of the HCG hormone associated with pregnancy. Tests like this can find hormones even in very old and very deteriorated blood stains, and they were still unable to find a trace. So basically, it doesn't matter how old the blood is. They could have, if she was pregnant, they would have found something, and they did not. Unwilling to be like Elsa and let it go, Al-Fayed even got members of his staff to validate his claim by insisting that Diana and Dodi had visited his Parisian villa in order to choose a room for the baby. And although they had indeed visited the villa, the claims were exaggerated to say that they had been there for 2 hours with an Italian interior designer. I'm having problems pronouncing things tonight. My tongue is just disobeying.
My goodness.
Disobedient tongue.
I feel your pain. I feel it. Now you understand, too.
I do. There's so many words. So much to say.
So many $5 words.
Yeah. The big words. However, one of the villa's security guards went on record with The Sun to confess that the visit had only been around 30 minutes long and that an interior designer had not been present. He also provided CCTV images to prove his claims.
Oh.
He felt bad about lying. One of the things that I'd read is he didn't feel comfortable with the lying about the pregnancy and eventually came forward after he'd been let go. He was like, I don't work for them anymore. I'm just going to tell the truth. Another theory that Mohammed Al-Fayed subscribed to, and you'll notice that most of these conspiracy theories come from Dodi's father.
Yes.
He was, the way I see it, he's a grieving father looking for any sort of explanation as to why his son was taken from him.
Yeah.
You know, and on one hand, it seems very crazy with some of the conspiracies that he believed in, and it seems very irrational. But on the other hand, you look at it, and it's like a father's just lost his son. Mm. People get irrational like that, especially when they're taken so suddenly.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I said, on one hand, it's like, well, you're kind of a crazy. But on the other hand, it's like, no, I get it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So this theory states that Henry Paul, the driver of the car, as well as the acting head of the security at the Ritz Hotel, was secretly employed by MI6 and was paid to assassinate Diana and Dodi. For those of you who don't know, MI6 is kind of the FBI or the CIA of the UK.
Yes.
So he believed that the driver and somebody who'd worked for him for decades at the hotel security was also secretly a secret agent, living a double life, right? Richard Tomlinson, who was a former MI6 officer, even went as far as to claim, I saw his file. It's been well established that he went missing for, I wrote mission, he went mission.
Mission! He went mission!
He went missing for 2 or 3 hours the night of his death. Paul was found to have almost $250,000 in his bank account, as well as a significant amount of cash on his person at the time of death.
His person.
Which is considerable when you think about the fact that he only made about $35,000 a year.
Ooh, woo.
You know, he made just a little bit over minimum wage, you know. So for him to have that much money, a lot of people thought that was very fishy, you know, to have that much saved up and have that much on his, I couldn't find anything saying how much he had on his person, but apparently it was a considerable amount.
It's like, how much is your rent?
Right? In Paris?
Yeah, really?
Well, yeah. So people were wondering maybe this was his payoff to do it or something like that.
Yeah. No. Interesting.
Another conspiracy came up during the investigation of the wreckage. It was discovered from paint traces on the black Mercedes that Diana had been in that it had had some sort of an impact with a white Fiat Uno. I don't know how they were able to tell what kind of car it was just from paint, but maybe it's a specific kind of, maybe they use, I don't know, car people.
Yeah.
Car listeners.
How can we tell if it's a, like, make? Well, maybe you, yeah, all the way down to what kind of, hey, well, hey, we have one.
Oh, wait,
one.
We have a car. Ian.
What's
Ian.
Ian.
Producer.
Okay. If, can you tell, like, the make and model of a car based on, like, just paint residue? Like, do they use specific kinds of paint?
Yes, kind of, yeah. You would be able to narrow it down to maybe, depending on how big of a sample is left, mm-hmm. is it, like, left on a car, is it left on concrete or something like right. that? You could look at it under a microscope, like, take a picture of that, mm-hmm. and reference that color code against the other official color codes of different manufacturers. Okay. Where it goes wrong is, you know, like, paint does degrade mm-hmm. over time. So if it's an older car, you know, UV kind of
right.
takes that out of the equation.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they got a custom paint job, then
yeah.
who knows? So, yeah.
Okay.
It's mildly plausible. Mildly.
Gotcha.
Plausible.
Well, it is a fact that they found out that it was a Fiat Uno. I don't know. They apparently really did their research. I mean, this is MI6 that is doing the investigation. So they found out that it was from a Fiat Uno, a white Fiat Uno.
Producer Ian, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Claps for Ian.
Okay.
So, however, the French police have never been able to find the vehicle in question. Mohammed, forever grasping at any straw he could get his hands on, immediately claimed that the Fiat Uno was used by MI6 as a way to cause the crash, and even went so far as to claim it was owned by French paparazzo Jean-Paul James Andinson. Although it was discovered that Andinson did indeed own a white Fiat Uno, it was not drivable at the time of the accident, as it was 9 years old, had 325,000 kilometers on the odometer, and had not been maintained for many years prior. So, yes, he did own a car. Yes, he was a paparazzi.
Yeah.
But the car was not
operational.
Huh. Despite surmounting evidence from many sources that Andinson was in no way involved and was in fact more than 177 miles away from Paris at the time of the accident at his home, Mohamed Al-Fayed has stuck to his guns on this. Even after Andinson's suicide in May of 2000, Fayed stated that he believed Andinson committed suicide out of guilt over the part he played, or it may have even been an assassination by the French or British as a way to silence him and prevent him from ever revealing the truth.
Wow.
So he was a firm believer in that one.
Wow. That's an elaborate one there.
Right?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Another one is called The Flash Before the Crash. Mm-hmm. This is a conspiracy that was brought to light, pun intended, by French eyewitness named François Levister. He and his wife had been driving through the tunnel ahead of the Mercedes Diana and company were in and claimed he saw a bright flash of light right before the accident.
Oh.
This claim was further corroborated by American tourist Brian Anderson, who claimed he also saw a bright flash. Although the claims were later refuted by Levister's wife, and police were also aware of the fact that Levister had previously been convicted of dishonesty in court hearings in 1989 and had even served jail time for it. So he was known to be kind of a compulsive liar kind of get attention.
Hmm.
Also,
not to be trusted.
Right. Also, from what like police investigations were able to dig up, they said that the kind of strobe flash that could have caused an accident like that, it would have been so bright that all of the paparazzi following them would have seen and probably crashed as well.
So for it to only
cause one car to crash is very unlikely.
Yeah.
However, during a 1998 ITV program interview with Levister, enough weight was given to his claim that 93% of viewers believed it to be fact.
Hmm.
So this TV program was like, this happened, this happened, this mm-hmm. happened, this happened. And 93% of the viewers were like, yeah, I believe it. So, even though it's definitely been proven not to be real.
Huh. Yeah, people believe a lot.
Yeah,
things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine it now. What caused Diana's crash? Click here to find out.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, well, the internet says, the clickbait. Internet told me so.
The internet told me. Yes. You'll never... it'll blow your mind.
Yes.
So the last conspiracy I'm going to talk about is the fact that Diana personally believed she was going to be killed by the establishment.
Oh.
This isn't really so much a conspiracy due to the fact that this was actually something that she did believe. Mm. Diana had given one of her butlers, Paul Burrell, a letter for safekeeping that later came to light. Mm. In it, she wrote, "I am sitting here at my desk today in October, longing for someone to hug me and encourage me to keep strong and hold my head high. Mm. This particular phase in my life is the most dangerous. They are planning an accident in my car. Brake failure and serious head injury in order to make the path clear for Charles to marry."
Whoa! Ooh.
Right? So she, she'd had experience with car troubles prior to writing the letter. And it does leave you a very creepy feeling with how kind of foreboding it was and how kind of accurate it was in some cases.
A lot of cases.
So she had experienced car troubles in the weeks leading up to that. And her bodyguard had also recently died in a motorcycle accident that she believed was intentional.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's the last conspiracy I'm going to talk about with this. There were a couple other, like, small ones, but those were the big main ones.
Yeah.
Diana, though.
Going all day.
Yeah. She was loved by the masses, and her death hit hard for a lot of people. Like I said, the majority of people that were affected most were women between the ages of 25 and 44. In the months following her funeral, the suicide rate in England and Wales rose by 17% and deliberate self-harm by almost 45%.
Wow.
And then the greatest increase in suicides hits the demographic I'd mentioned, with the rate reaching over 45% in women 25 to 44.
Wow.
Researchers think that this was caused by what's known as the identification effect, where people project themselves onto a sort of role model. Diana was loved for her many charities, as well as her ability to identify with normal people, which is what, earned her the title the People's Princess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is what I have to cover about Princess Diana.
I love it.
She was a wonderful person.
I remember I did a report on her when I was in, like, grade school, but I don't remember very much of it, and, sadly, but thank you for, you know, recapping a lot about her, because, because the anniversary was recently.
Just recently, yeah. It was the 21st anniversary. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
And it's, what's so sad about it and tragic is that, and this was something that I read, people referred to her story as the fairy tale that refused to have a happy ending.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like she was the epitome of, like, your fairy tale princess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, kind of rags to riches.
Absolutely.
You know, a heart of gold. Mm-hmm. Even though she was mistreated, she didn't let it dampen her spirits. She didn't let it harden her heart. She stayed a good person. Like, even though she was divorced by Prince Charles and kind of abandoned by the royal family, She didn't let it make her bitter.
Yeah.
She stayed a sweet, wonderful light in the world. And for that light to get snuffed out so suddenly, I feel like that was part of the reason why people were so affected by it, is because, you know, when a light that bright and that touching is snuffed out, it lets the darkness come in all of a sudden, and we're reminded how horrible the world can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was very sad. Not to mention, she left behind two children.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they are doing so well now.
And, you know, I love following them, and congratulations to the happy couples.
Yeah, they've turned into such very charming young men.
They have really, well, not young men anymore.
They're young-ish, they're men, but they've done well with their lives. You know, they've married wonderful women that support them and love them.
Yeah.
You know,
at least from the outside, you know, we obviously don't know them very well, so, you know.
But William has, what is it, two children now?
Isn't it three?
Maybe it's three, but, yeah, you know, and Henry just married that American woman.
Meghan Markle.
Yep. So
did you see recently her, I don't want to gossip about her actually.
But it was, you know, they're doing well, and I think William will one day make a very good king.
Yeah.
And one thing that I remember, like, specifically was something William told his mother when she stopped being a princess, you know, when she was divorced. Mm-hmm. He told her, when I'm king, I will give you your title back. And I hope that he does. Mm, yeah. Like, I mean, that makes me kind of tear up.
Oh.
But I hope that when William does become king, that he kind of, like, retroactively reinstates Diana's title as princess.
Yeah.
I will... like I said, I'm tearing up now, but I will... I will, if that ever does happen, I will cry.
Yeah.
And it'll be a happy tear.
And I'm sure he will. It'll happen. It'll be in our lifetime.
I don't know.
I still love me some Lizzie, and Lizzie can keep living as long as she wants to.
I do love Queen Elizabeth. She's a tart, and I love her.
I'm sure it's dramatized, but I love The Crown. That is one of my favorite shows. It's on Netflix, and it's, like, they do such a great job, and I've heard it, like, that even Queen Elizabeth really likes it, at least so I'm told.
Mm.
But, and if she approves, then...
Must be pretty decent.
I'm sure it's dramatized, and I'm sure that's why she loves it. Probably. She's like, oh, wow, this is far more interesting because people are boring. That's why even reality TV isn't really reality. It's because people are boring. You're boring, but you love you. We love you, and that's why we have podcasts, to make us interesting and to be all part of each other's lives. So, so we swapped.
Yeah, we swapped. So thank you guys. Thank you for listening and thank you for bearing with us as we covered each other's topics. We hope that we did each other justice.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and I don't want to call people boring either. Like, I just want to backtrack a second. Everybody is exciting in their own right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway.
So we'll be back on November 1st. Unfortunately, we are no longer going to be able to do the Halloween episode like we thought. We both had a lot of extra stuff come up recently with our jobs. I'm getting a new position at work, and Tess has had people call out.
All kinds of I just have projects, all kinds of projects.
So,
but it's really exciting, and I'll have all kinds of things to share soon. And, but we will release our November 1st episode a night early.
Yeah, we'll release it on Halloween so that you guys can get your episode a day early and celebrate Halloween with us. So, as always, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate all that you guys have done.
And all your support.
And all the support. It's been so amazing. Like, this podcast
is,
this podcast is just growing and growing. You know, like Tessa mentioned, we've hit 2,000 downloads before this episode came out. And at this moment, we're already closing in on 2,500.
Yep.
So it's been going so well, and we never really expected this. And we're just so thankful and grateful for you guys.
We really are.
All of our conspirators.
So thanks for joining us. And we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And we got some parties to plan. And we hope you guys do too. Because happy Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you guys on Halloween. Ha.
Yeah.
Ha. Stay out of trouble.
Stay out of trouble. You know? And don't forget.
Finger guns. Big Brother.
Oh, God.
No, you're terrible. Don't forget your finger guns.
Don't forget your finger guns.
I think that's an episode title right there.
Don't forget your finger guns. All right. So thank you guys once again. And don't forget,
Big Brother is watching. If you'd like to learn more about us or read our deeper blog posts about our topics, head over to our website, conspiraciesencryptids.com. There you can find links to all our social media and all your favorite podcatchers. If you like what you hear, leave us some love in the reviews on iTunes.
The more you like us, the longer we can keep doing this. And if you're really vibing off this little shindig and you're feeling generous, check out our Patreon. We have all kinds of fun goodies and extras for our devoted conspirators. Also, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more updates. And don't forget,
Big Brother is watching.